Today, markets greet light in tunnel, but is that a train coming? Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news. This is our weekly market update, where we start in the US, cross to Europe and Asia, and end in Australia, and we cover commodities and crypto along the way. Remarkably, the MSCI Global Index, which hit another high on Friday, is more than 50% higher over just 3 years. The European Stoxx 600 is a mere 30% up over the same period, having gained new ground this week, while the Dow closed at a record high on Friday as revived hopes for a September rate cut pushed Treasury yields lower and tech stocks higher, following Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell signalling the Fed was open to cutting interest rates as soon as next month. The Dow rose 1.9% to hit a fresh record close of 45,631. The S&P 500 gained 1.52%, hovering near record levels, and the Nasdaq Composite climbed 2%, but was still off 0.9% on the day. The rate-sensitive Russell 2000 index surged 4.1%, hitting its highest level so far this year. And the ASX 200 in Australia was up 29% over 3 years, but slid slightly on Friday, and across the week was up to 8,967. In his final address as Fed chair at the Jackson Hole Symposium in Wyoming, Powell hinted at a September interest rate cut, but stopped short of committing, striking a careful balance between mounting job market risks and lingering inflation worries. One little phrase, the baseline outlook and the shifting balance of risks may warrant adjusting our policy stance, was all it took to deliver the dovish tilt that markets wanted. That gave a green light to buy risky assets on the hope the central bank is ready to cut rates. But I took it as a risk of stagflation ahead, and I worry that markets are being over-optimistic still. The speech on Friday came amid mounting pressure from the White House to ease monetary policy, which has raised market concerns that political interference will lead the US central bank to become too aggressive in cutting rates in the future. The pressure had been ratcheted up earlier in the week after Trump urged Fed Governor Lisa Cook to resign, a move that could allow him to appoint more dovish members to the Fed's rate-setting Federal Open Market Committee. On Friday, Trump said he would fire Cook if she doesn't resign following allegations over her mortgage loans. Powell made all the right noises about being guided by the data and only the data, but the shadow of the White House hangs heavily over everything the Fed does, and that shadow is getting longer. The Jackson Hole address followed a weak July jobs report and significant downward revisions to earlier job figures that fueled bets the US central bank will cut interest rates later in the year from the current 4.25 to 4.5% range. Those expectations, however, lost steam in recent weeks as the surge in wholesale prices in July fueled concerns that stubbornly high inflation would indeed limit the Fed's ability to come to the market's rescue with heavy rate cuts. Investors also noted that more data on inflation and labour market are due ahead of the Fed's next meeting, and that could be factored into a rate decision, potentially stalling any rally. But late on Friday, traders have assigned an 80% chance of a cut, and rate-sensitive two-year US Treasury yields dropped by about 10 basis points to 3.69%, and benchmark 10-year yields were down nearly 8 basis points to 4.26%. Remember, yields move inversely to prices. Earlier in the week, investors had been skittish, pondering whether AI was being overhyped and trying to decode the continuing conflicting economic signals across many countries as the impacts of tariffs and also the Ukraine situation oscillated. Powell's address, however, sent the dollar sharply lower on concerns over a slowing economy, with worries about the independence of the Federal Reserve compounding the sell-off. Lower interest rates can make the dollar less attractive to investors who may seek better returns in other countries, reducing the demand for the greenback. The dollar index, which measures the greenback against a basket of currencies, including the yen and the euro, was last down around 1%. Markets, I think, saw what they wanted from Powell, though while Powell is more dovish, than when he last spoke in July, it was hardly an extremely dovish speech on an absolute basis. He's still nervous about inflation and warned again that tariffs could generate more persistent rises in prices. In addition, while job creation is cooling, the job market slack is not, due to a drop in labour supply. As a result, the break-even number for the US economy has moved lower, he said. The second quarter earnings season is now largely finished, and UBS lifted its price target for the S&P 500, citing strong second quarter earnings and improved economic conditions. The investment bank increases its target to the end of the year to 6,600 for the S&P 500 and its June 2026 target to 6,800. UBS noted that third quarter guidance was also positive, suggesting no slowdown in profit growth despite tariff goods now reaching stores. The Philadelphia SE Semiconductor Index soared 2.7%, while most mega-cap growth stocks also jumped. Tesla led gains at 6.2%. However, analysts can point to warning signs, including the high P multiples and the Conference Board US Leading Index 10 economic indicators over the coincident composite at lows not seen since the GFC or the early 80s. And there was a further steady stream of warnings. The market was actually in stupid territory, suggesting the light at the end of the tunnel is indeed that incoming train of falling markets, weaker returns from AI, and economic damage from tariffs. Bank of America said its bull to bear indicator edged down to 6 from 6.1, reflecting the combination of developed market equity outflows, weak breadth, and bearish hedge fund positioning, but partially offset by low cash levels. That said, Fitch Ratings affirmed the US long-term foreign currency issuer default rating at AA+ with a stable outlook, citing the country's large economy and the dollar's role as a global reserve currency. AI has been a powerful force in equity markets, but its economic impact remains far less significant. That's according to BCA Research, who noted that much of the capital spending driving the boom has been on imported equipment, meaning it contributed little to US GDP. CapEx intentions, which tend to correlate with non-residential investment, also remain subdued. But the company news kept rolling on, with Meta Platforms signing a $10 billion deal with Alphabet Google, which will see the Facebook owner use Google's cloud servers, storage, and other services over the next 6 years. Meta, along with Wall Street's so-called AI hyperscalers, is racing to build superintelligent AI amid growing calls from investors for returns on the hundreds of billions of dollars poured into AI development. A recent study by MIT found that 95% of organizations are getting zero, yes, zero return on their investments in generative AI. Nvidia fell following a report that the chip designer had asked some component suppliers to halt production of its China-specific H20 AI chip amid increasing scrutiny following the chip from Beijing. Concerns have also emerged that LLM capabilities may be plateauing, with Apple researchers highlighting persistent weakness and GPT-5 receiving an underwhelming reception despite its release earlier in the year. Another risk lies in rising energy use. Data centers already consume 4.4% of US electricity in 2023, a figure the Department of Energy expects to triple by 2030. Wholesale electricity prices have jumped, with grid operator PJM attributing about three quarters of the increase to data center demand. In July, average household power bills rose 6.2% in the US year over year, more than double the pace of overall inflation. Intuit stock fell after the software company forecast first quarter revenue growth below expectations, hit by sluggish performance at its marketing platform, MailChimp. Zoom video communication stock, though, rose after the communications company presented strong second quarter results and boosted its full year revenue forecast, showing continued expansion of its enterprise business. Intel Corp, meanwhile, rose more than 5%, adding to gains this week after President Donald Trump confirmed that the US is taking a near 10% stake in the chip maker. Secretary of Commerce Howard Lutnick confirmed on Friday on X This historic agreement strengthens US leadership in semiconductors, which will both grow our economy and help secure America's technological edge. But such direct intervention by the White House is, well, to put it politely, unusual. The US taking partial ownership would mark a stunning level of intervention in an American company, shattering norms that investors and policymakers have long considered sacrosanct, except in the most extraordinary situations, such as a war or a systemic economic crisis. Intel declined a request for comment on the announcement's timing. Though the administration in recent weeks telegraphed its intentions, the Intel action leaves open untold risks that could distort markets and the flow of capital, as well as lead to massive taxpayer losses. But the government's bet could also pay off in a major way for the troubled chip maker that was once a pioneer in the industry. Intel was facing a turbulent stretch, with investors worried it was losing its technological edge and falling too far behind competitors. Trump has embraced a new brand of economic statescraft in his second term as he looks to bolster domestic manufacturing, rebalance trade ties, and ensure American dominance in critical sectors. Trump, in early August, announced NVIDIA and AMD agreed to give the US government 15% of revenue generated from sales of AI chips to China. That followed Trump earlier in the year securing a golden share from Nippon Steel, a Japanese steelmaker that gives the president power to make decisions over United States steel. The volatility index was down to 4.22. That's a new six-month low. Gold futures for December delivery was up slightly to $3,417.20 a troy ounce. And elsewhere in commodities trading, crude oil for delivery in October rose 0.39% to $63.77 a barrel, while October Brent rose 0.21% to $69.79 a barrel. The euro-US dollar was up slightly to 1.1722, while the Japanese yen fell 0.96% to 146.93. European shares closed at their highest level in more than 5 months on Friday after the US Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell pointed to a possible September interest rate cut. The pan-European stock 600 closed 0.4% higher. That's less than 1% away from its record highs. The index logged its third week of gains. The DAX index in Germany gained 0.3% and the FTSE in the UK increased 0.1%, while the CAC 40 in France rose 0.4%. But UBS said in a note that it remains neutral on Eurozone equities, with European markets navigating near-term macro uncertainty while lowering its earnings growth estimate for the area this year to down 3% from flat. Progress on ending the war in Ukraine has also stalled, with markets awaiting more clarity after initial optimism from Russia and Ukraine's meeting with the US fizzled out. Meanwhile, data on Friday showed the German economy contracted by 0.3% in the second quarter of 2025, compared with a prior estimate of 0.1% down. On an annual basis, GDP grew just 0.2% after seasonal and calendar adjustments. The Statistics Office also sharply revised down GDP figures for 2023 and 2024. As a result, Germany's economic output remains slightly below its 2019 level, underscoring a prolonged period of stagflation. Boosting the chemicals index, Dulux paint maker AkzoNobel rose 6.8% to the top of the stock 600 after activist investor CVN Capital took a 3% stake. That's according to a filing by Dutch market regulators. Standard Chartered shares gained 4.2% after the bank said that it received a favorable ruling by the US Department of Justice in a long-running civil case. And UBS's most recent research has revised its Eurozone earnings growth forecast for 2025 down. The new projection is for a 3% contraction, a drop from its previous estimate of 0%. This revision is a result of a weaker second quarter earnings season and unfavorable currency movements. Despite the downgrade, UBS expects earnings to expand by 5% in 2026, with further acceleration anticipated in 2027, potentially exceeding current consensus expectations. Actually, European equities have lagged behind other major markets, with the Stoxx 600 delivering only a 5% price return since the middle of 2024, underperforming the US and Asia ex Japan by more than 15% during the same period. Most Asian stocks rose on Friday, although gains were muted as investors hunkered down in anticipation of more cues on US interest rates from Jerome Powell. Japanese shares were a mixed bag as consumer inflation data for July showed price growth remained well above the Bank of Japan's annual target, a trend that pushed the bank into raising interest rates further. Japan's Nikkei 225 index moved in a tight range, while the broader topics added 0.4%. The Nikkei was trading down 1.7% across the week, while the topics was down just a little. Both indices were hit by profit-taking after reaching record highs last week. National core CPI, which excludes volatile fresh food prices, grew 3.1% year-on-year in July. That's according to government data. The print was just above expectations of 3%, but cooled from the 3.3% seen in the prior month. A core CPI reading that excludes both fresh food and energy prices remained steady at 3.4% year-over-year. The print, of course, is closely watched by the Bank of Japan as a gauge of underlying inflation and was also, of course, well above the central bank's 2% annual target. Sticky inflation puts more pressure on the Bank of Japan to hike interest rates, with analysts seen penciling in at least one rate hike by the end of 2025. Such a scenario bodes poorly for Japanese shares, of course. Broader Asian stocks advanced on Friday, with most regions set for middling weekly performances after sharp losses during the week. Chinese markets, however, outpaced their peers on expectations of more stimulus from Beijing. Non-technical sectors, which represents a greater proportion of mainland markets, also benefited from buying as investors pivoted out of tech en masse. The Shanghai Shenzhen CSI 300 and Shanghai Composite Indices rose 0.7 and 0.3% respectively on Friday and were trading up between 2 and 3% across the week. The CSI 300 was at the 10-month high, actually, while the Composite Index scaled a 9-year peak. Hong Kong's Hang Seng Index rose 0.4%, but was trading down mildly for the week amid weakness in tech shares and a mixed crop of second quarter earnings. Bernstein told investors on a note on Friday that it believes the sharp rebound in Chinese equities since April looks sustainable, citing valuations, earnings momentum, and policy support, though it flags signs of overheating in parts of the market, valuation upcycle, falling equity risk premia, risks of strong earnings, recovery cycle, supportive policy measures, and strong domestic liquidity will remain supportive for the markets, they said. South Korea's KOSPI rose 0.9%, extending a rebound from recent losses, but the index was set to lose around 2% across the week on an extended rout in tech shares. India's Nifty 50 fell 0.5% on Friday, but was trading up 1.5% across the week. Strong Indian PMI data and promises of reform from the government helped investors look past concerns over higher US trade tariffs against India over its purchase of Russian oil. The Australian share market notched up a third straight weekly gain, which eased back on Friday, of course, as investors took profits after strong corporate results pushed the index beyond 9,000 points for the first time. The ASX 200 rose 0.3% across the week and ended at 8,967.40. On Friday, the benchmark lost 0.6% as 7 of the 11 sectors retreated. Near the halfway point in the reporting season, Morningstar market strategist Lockton Holloway said, "The market is content with the results so far. We've upgraded fair value estimates for about 40% of stocks, a slightly higher proportion than in recent cycles. Downgrades, meanwhile, are contained at under 10%, all up, a solid start, though there's plenty to go." Consumer staples was the weakest sector as Ingham's Group plunged 20.3% to $2.83 after a 10.2% drop in full-year net profit to $90 million. Its result and outlook were both below market expectations. Supermarket giant Coles fell 3.3%, $20.85 ahead of its results coming up on Tuesday. Healthcare also retreated as CSL tumbled 4.2% to $216.60, capping off a near 20% decline for the week after a sharp earnings miss saw it record its worst one-day decline ever on Tuesday. In company news, Gomez dived 18.2% to to a record close low of $23.70 after results came in well below market expectations and concerns rose over its outlook. Mortgage insurer Helia rallied 1.8% to $5.83 after an 8% jump in net profit, despite warnings of a challenging outlook for the business. And buy now, pay later operator Zip rocketed 20.2% to $3.75 as it mulled a dual listing of its shares on the NASDAQ to support growing investor interest in the US. Accent Group dived 17.8% to $1.37 after its 2025 financial year results was in line with guidance, but trading for 2026 was tracking below market expectations. Monash IVF tanked 13.7% to 69.5 cents after reporting underlying net profit of $27.4 million for the 2024-25 financial year. That was down 8.1% on the prior year, but in line with guidance. And James Hardy rebounded 5.2% to $30.50 after crashing more than 30% in the previous two sessions. Now in Canberra, the good and the great of the nation had spent 3 days talking at an event specifically designed to inject dynamism and growth into Australia's stalled economy. Fund managers are struggling to explain the 30% plus rise in the ASX 200 over the past 3 years. Does it reflect Australia's huge superannuation pool inflating asset prices? Have investors been betting on interest rate cuts at home and abroad? Are foreign investors with an allocation to the Asian region parking money in what they see as a safe haven, at least compared to China? Well, perhaps all of the above, but what it doesn't reflect is corporate Australia riding a strong economy to earnings growth. Indeed, reporting season makes it clear that the mood inside boardrooms is that profits must be driven by cutting costs. CSL's decision to slash 3,000 jobs was just one example this week. Logistics giant Brambles was rewarded by investors after saying it was preparing to cut hundreds of jobs, even after a productivity drive that has cut big costs out of the business. And rail giant Aurizon is planning job cuts, and miners BHP and Whitehaven Coal are considering reducing staff in Queensland. Telstra Chief Executive Vicky Brady recently announced another round of layoffs, while Transurban, QBE, Northern Star and Iress are all focusing tightly on cost control. So let's be clear, shall we? Under the hood, GDP per capita is lower than it was 5 years ago, which means many Australians feel like they're facing a recession. Productivity has stagnated since 2016, with countries such as Latvia and Slovakia leaving Australia in the dust. Wage growth has decoupled from productivity and business fundamentals. Energy costs are high despite abundant energy resources. Capital investment is in a prolonged drought. Exports are too concentrated in a small number of sectors, particularly mining, and taxation as a share of the economy is rising as governments try to fund and execute on big spending promises. Oh, by the way, Victoria, of course, is in a complete economic mess. Now, I'm not sure that the roundtable got close to any of this other than the pretty direct threat of more taxes, especially on assets, and of course road charging and more. As expected, an opportunity missed, despite some good input from some knowledgeable people. And by the way, the Aussie was at 64.92 US cents and 48 UK pence, while the two-year yield dropped on Friday to 3.356 on future rate cuts. Finally, in crypto, Bitcoin was last at 115,850. That's down across the week, as BOA indicated a net outflow of investments over the past week from crypto into other asset classes. So all up, I think markets are self-deceived on the upswing, but that train in the tunnel is indeed still coming. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.